Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 369 for Wednesday, the 26th of June, 2013. My name is Jim Race. I am here in the Sierra foothills of California, along with my colleague, Martin Darlington, over in the hinterlands of the Wales. How are you doing, Martin?
I'm doing very well, Jim, and as ever...
Oh, shit. All right. Damn it.
Not back to work till Saturday, and it's Thursday evening, so I've got plenty of recovery time for...
Nice pour.
Oh, listen to that.
I know. Well done. All right.
Wait. Bit of black gold.
Hold on. Oh, weak.
Well, that was quite a long one, though. That was like a...
Well, it's a big can. Welcome back. It's been a while since you and I talked, sir.
Yes, yeah. It's either been you and Jules or me and Jules. Bless him. Jules is probably the busiest of the three of us at work, and we keep roping him in. So, no, Jules is having a stand-down week this week.
I believe that's probably the best for him. Without a doubt, I guess we should talk about it right off the bat, because the news right now, Martin.
Yeah. This is Thursday evening. We've had Aston being a Saturday race. We had FP1 and FP2 today. And FP1 was dry for everyone except the very end of Moto2. And then FP2 was very, very wet. And, yeah, we had a couple of fallers. And Lorenzo crashed with a strange high side. He didn't launch him upwards. It sort of launched him forwards. On the back, people will be familiar who are familiar with Assen. I can't remember the name of the kink, but it's the fastest bit of the track.
Hoge something. Yeah.
And it's a sort of straight with a kink with a straight. And if you've ever played it on PlayStation, it's very difficult to master.
204 kilometers an hour when he went down.
Ouch. And it launched him forward. He landed on his left shoulder, and here it is confirmed he's broken his left collarbone. He is flying to Barcelona to, I think they said on Sunday, to have surgery. But let's not forget, this is the kid who bump started his bike on the grid at China in 2008 with a couple of broken feet. So, you know, he's a tough kid. We saw Colin come back a couple of years ago with a broken collarbone, and the next week got on the podium. So, you know, they're all... tough kids.
I remember Haga breaking his collarbone on a Saturday at Miller for World Superbike and racing the next day.
Yeah.
And getting on the podium.
Yeah, I seem to remember Nori Haga doing something similar.
That's what I just said.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said Colin.
No.
Haga. I mean, they are. And that was his, I think someone said that was his first ever break. First of a bone he'd broken in professional racing. But, yeah, really awful news. Marquez, interesting comments. He sounds genuinely gutted. You know, he said it's just not going to be the same. You know, it's such bad luck. He's been so strong. Danny sort of said, it makes the weekend feel a bit flat. Yeah. But, obviously, Danny will also be looking at the – I mean, let's face it, that it's such a fine line. You know, I was thinking earlier, I can't think of any of them who at some stage of the season so far in some session haven't put their bike down and they can just get unlucky. I mean, look at Marquez at Mugello only two races ago. He gets off the bike at 200 miles an hour.
Yeah.
He could quite easily have been seriously injured and he skinned his chin. And, well, you know, and normally...
skinned his chin. That's a nice way of saying that you basically beat the shit out of your face. You basically look like you got in a fight.
Yeah. Well, he did. He got a load of gravel up inside his helmet, I believe. At that speed, that's going to be like getting hit by bullets, I should think. But, yeah.
Kind of a crazy afternoon. Actually, you know, Moto 2, which I haven't had the opportunity yet to watch, but I understand that was also a crash fest. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I heard that Moto 3 was also a bit of the same as well. So,
yeah, and thankfully, it doesn't sound like there's been any other serious injuries. Right. Or when I say serious injuries, let's face it, for these guys, a broken collarbone isn't that serious, but it does take young Jorge out of the weekend.
Yeah,
which is not great.
You know, guys like Jorge have at their dispense a hyperbaric chamber somewhere where they can go,
Yep.
they can go and do their rehab. And so I'm pretty sure, I think the last thing that we talked about before we got disconnected was talking about Haga, and how he came back at Miller, that one time, the next day, sans any real, and got on the podium, I believe.
That's quite timely because we've got some Norrie Haga news later on when we look at World Superbikes who are at Imola this weekend.
We do. Why don't we roll into that and then we'll bounce back into the MotoGP stuff. And just very briefly before we get into that, you, pat on the back, virtual and a golf clap from overseas.
Thank you.
Did a brilliant interview with Jenny Tinnemus, somebody that we've wanted to have on the show for a long time. And so we'll definitely plug JennyTinnemus.com, her workshop where she works. Ken Haylock, a tip of the hat out there. You've been pushing us to get this one for a long time. And so cool for that. She lives right down works right down the road from you. So it was a bit of a short jaunt.
10 miles. Yeah, exactly. And it was really, really easy to do. You'd think, I mean, Jenny's in her early 30s. She's been racing a long time. But you'd think she'd just finished her first ever race. The enthusiasm, well, you guys will hear it, you know, hear it in her voice. You listen to her and she's just absolutely bursting with enthusiasm. And she was funny. She was, you know, really just happy to talk. I imagine she's one of those people you could sit down and spend hours just talking about racing, every aspect of it.
Kind of like Mark.
Yeah, exactly. And very similar in that sense that, you know, at their end of the spectrum, it's a struggle to raise the money and to be able to go. And, you know, I mean, you'll hear it in the interview. I mean, Jenny was brought up around bikes and watching bike racing, but she doesn't come from a racing background. She's not from a racing dynasty or anything. She had a cousin who raced a battered old car and did very well. But, you know, her and her brother do their web design together. Her race mechanic is also a business partner and they run the twowheelworkshop.com. It's a bike garage. You know, you want your bike serviced. In fact, I met a paramedic there who had on his T-shirt the paramedic, but in letters like the doctor a la Valentino Rossi, and his Africa twin, which is about to take off the far-flung corners of the world, was getting fettled and welded. But they ran out of gas for doing some welding, so I was able to use that opportunity to jump in and speak to Jen. But it was brilliant.
I'm
really busy.
I hope you dropped off some stickers.
I didn't, but I will be back too. And, you know, and we'll have a little chat about it after we've run the interview. But in news, in fact, just before we go into the World Superbike bit, I ought to give props to listener Scott Baldwin, a.k.a. Rose Runner, who very politely and gently pointed out that I have been continually misattributing the, if you're not crashing, you're not going fast enough to Kenny Roberts. And he pointed out Kenny hates crashing. He said he'd never say that. He thinks it may have been Dave Aldana of Skeleton Leathers fame, apparently, mm-hmm. who said it. And I think I got confused with the quote that both Scott and I agreed was by Kenny Roberts, which was, I can stop a fast crasher from crashing, but I can't make a slow rider fast. Now, the last time I heard that applied, it was to Casey Stoner in 2007. But originally, Scott thinks it was probably said about John Kaczynski being the fast crasher and Luca Cadalora being the slow one. So thank you, Rose Runner. And, you know, yet another piece of Martin errata gets out there.
Scott Baldwin, his street ride is an RG500.
Yeah.
So a bold man.
But he did say in one of the first email, he said, look, you know, I've grown up living quite close to Kenny Roberts, and I think he gave the impression he was about the same age.
Yeah.
And he said it was watching Kenny Roberts ride that made me realize I couldn't do this for a living because I'd have to beat him, and I couldn't do that. So, you know, it was really nice. So appreciated, Scott. Thank you very much indeed. And, you know, keep us on the straight and narrow.
What was the other thing that I wanted to mention too? On the donor front.
Yeah.
That is my responsibility. And so I guess I'm technically the CFO of Motopod, and I haven't been keeping up, mostly because I've been moving. And so, I still do see donations coming in, and thank you to each and every one of you that are doing so. I will get that updated. But I just want to thank those of you that are doing it. It's a bit of a nightmare trying to compile all that data. And there are a lot of you that are bringing in great and small amounts into the show. So thank you. On another note, Martin, it looks like we're almost there with Dorna. They actually have said they've received our contract now. Jules and I were joking about this yesterday.
I saw the email. Yes. Shall I resend it? And they're like, no, we've got it.
Yeah.
It just took a roundabout route to get to them, I think.
Yeah. And so it sounds like that is taken care of, which means that Laguna is a go, although I need to figure out how to get some money together to get to that, because I'm still underemployed. I'm the most underemployed person on the staff, if you will. Well, it is what it is. Hopefully things will pick up soon. There was still something else that I wanted to talk about, but seriously, I want to drop back to the Jenny Timmons bit. The one thing that you got out of the interview, and the one thing that I love about the show, is that you were able, I heard the smile in her voice.
Yeah.
And that is the kind of thing that makes this a great show. Is to be able to actually elicit emotion from people that are involved with the sport. You know, there was there was a great video interview that I posted on the Facebook fan page with Mark. And the interviewer wasn't great, but it was him talking about Yoshi and his death at the Isle of Man. And, you know, that was a very passionate interview from Mark. But in the same vein, the passion you could hear from Jenny with your chat with her came through. You can hear her smile. And
well, as I said to you before the show, you know, you'd think she's just done her first race and gone,
yeah,
wow, this is brilliant. Well, she's been racing for, 15, 16 years, and she's still like, wow, this is brilliant.
Yep.
And she just wants to go as fast as she can. And, you know, and as she said, one of the things we discuss is, you know, it's about the whole package. And without the funding of someone like, you know, Samsung Honda or the Paul Bird Kawasaki team and the like, you just, and they'll probably say, well, we're not exactly rolling in it ourselves, but it literally is. I mean, it's her and her crew chief work all week in that workshop to raise the money to go racing at the weekends. She trained as a bike mechanic because she knew it would help in the pursuit of her passion, which is racing. And she's the fastest lady around the TT, which is mentioned more than once. You know, that is a real achievement. And she's just such a lovely, lovely lass. She really is such a nice, it's the same sort of character thing as, you know, okay, he's been a bit miserable this year, but Polly Spargo, you know, he's always got a smile on the face. Mark, you know, I know Mark's quite laconic about it. He's quite laid back, but that thing of, yeah, I'm getting a Macau, you know, it's great. It's a great piss up and all that. And I remember you saying to him, you know, how does it compare to TT? Oh, nowhere near.
Yeah.
It might feel dangerous, but it's not that dangerous, you know. But it's that kind of just joie de vivre.
Yes.
I think the French would call it.
I believe that's actually the proper term for the way that came across. You guys will hear. Actually, why don't we just run that now?
Yeah.
And then we will roll into the rest of the news, and we'll bring it back to you guys.
Brilliant. So it's Martin for Motopod, and I'm at Two Wheel Workshop, which is the day job for Jenny Timmons, British Super Sport in the past racer, British Super Bike racer, recent double winner of the Thundersport GB race at Alton Park, and the fastest lady around the TT course. Hello, Jenny.
Hi, Edward.
Yeah, thanks ever so much for making time for us. Jenny's actually at work and is currently fettling an Africa twin that's going off on an expedition for a customer. But they've run out of gas, I think. So they're having to take a bit of a break. Really, taking you back to the start. Now, I heard an interview you did quite recently. I can't remember which organisation it was for. We don't like to plug our competitors, so I'm going to skim over who it was for. But you were saying that your mum and dad were both into bikes, and that's where the fascination came from. That I kind of get, but what made you decide to go and actually race?
I think it's everything I was watching when I was growing up was like Formula One or bike racing on telly, touring cars at Oak Park, and sort of everything sort of surrounded motorsport. You know, my cousin, he's a member of TVR Owners Club. He had an old classic TVR, and he used to go and race that against everyone else because his was quite old and he'd restored it and it's a bit battered. You know, he didn't mind thrashing it around, and he used to just go and win everything, all the in club competitions.
Right.
And I thought,
because people
amazing.
With pristine ones,
yeah,
would get out of his way.
Kind of yeah, they didn't want to scratch their cars. So, and he was just a complete lunatic. And even against the guys actually that would, you know, give it, he was just really good. He's really good at driving a car. And yeah, I kind of looked up to him and thought he was amazing. So he sort of, I mean, my first ever trip to a racetrack was going to watch him at Donington.
Right.
So yeah, and just loved it, loved the whole thing. My parents always used to watch Formula One on telly on a Sunday, sort of. It was just, we always did it from when I was small.
Yeah. So did you start racing before you rode on the road?
No, just, I mean, my dad had a bike. He's got, he had a bike that he used to commute to work, which was actually my mum's, and he's got a couple of old classic bikes, an AJS and a Matchless. And we were members of the AGS and Matchless Owners Club, so we have an annual meeting every August bank holiday that, you know, since me and my brother were young, about six and he was eight, we used to go every year.
So you're surrounded by the whole...
Yeah, just surrounded by bikes all the time. It just seems completely normal, you know.
So I'm guessing you had a moped at 16.
I didn't want a moped. I went straight to a little 125, like sort of a trials sort of look bike.
Yep.
Quite a big, normal bike with gears and clutch and everything. A little TS125 Suzuki.
And did the racing thing come? Did you just find you wanted to go faster than the roads would allow, or was it an extension of road riding?
I don't really know. I just want to go and race because I thought I could. I don't know. Because I've been watching racing on telly and then watched my cousin go racing and. Like my brother's mates, my brother, you know, a bit of boy racer, and even my cousin was sort of like a bit of a boy racer. He used to drive around his car, and as soon as I got my bike, I was just a little bit of a lunatic on the road. I just loved going fast and speed, and
yeah.
I just wanted to go racing, and just thought I could, and assumed I could, and assumed.
Because I did hear in your story that you went to your first race, I think you had a stock 600?
No, stock 400. I went
to
college to train to be a mechanic, and then got a job whilst I was training in a bike dealership, and the money from that I used to save up to buy a VFR 400. And then luckily the dealership that I worked for, they ran track days at Anglesey Circuit, which is not far from here.
Yeah.
So I just used to jump on their track days for free. Just blast around on the 400, and then got asked, the guy that I was working with used to race, so I said to him, how do you start racing? And he said, you need to fill in this ACU licence form. And I filled it in, sent it off, and away, you know, away you go. That was it from there.
Fantastic. And then I remember from your interview you said that, or in fact I think it's on your webpage, and it's just saying that there was a bit of a epiphany when you realised a stock bike with, you know, just race tyres on isn't that competitive.
No, it was so slow, because I had a massive sort of inner determination thinking that I could win, and then I rode really hard, but everyone would just leave me down the straights, and I knew I couldn't afford to tune the bike, because it's completely... When everyone says I rode stock bike, this was literally stock bike.
Yeah.
Say, rode friends on it, I just took took lights off, still had the horn on it, took the number plate off. Against the tune 400, because people were tuning them then, you know, and even boring now.
Oh, thank you very much.
Top.
We've just been provided with brews.
Cool. You got a friend. Oh, there was a fly on it.
Oh, don't worry.
But yeah, it was quite...
Yeah, I think it got me.
It was quite a lot slower, so... decided that I couldn't afford to turn it into a race bike. So sold that and got a little 125. You know, little GP.
You raced in the British 125 GP for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, I got... just stayed in that for quite a while, because it was probably the cheapest class at the time. I desperately wanted to move up, really. But yeah, I kind of stayed in it for quite a few years just because I couldn't afford to move up. So.
And what would you say, not necessarily your favourite class, but the class at which you feel you can produce your best? Would it be Superbike or Supersport?
I don't know. Probably if I went back to 125s, to be fair, because it's just cheaper racing, you know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do Superbike on a really small budget, which puts you at a disadvantage at this level. You know, you sort of get away with it at club level if your bike's not quite up to scratch.
Yeah.
But at this level, because everyone's good, if your bike's not good, you know, you're struggling.
That becomes the defining difference between,
I mean, obviously it does make a difference for riders as well. I'm not saying I'm, like, a fantastic rider, you know, but it helps to have good equipment, so.
You're the fastest lady around a TT, and there have been some, I mean, Carolyn Sells has raced there, Maria, I wanted to call her Costello.
Yeah.
Of course, has racing. You know, there have been some pretty well-established, experienced female racers gone around there, and what was your top, like 120?
Just under 120, yeah.
Just under 120?
Yeah.
So is that your target? I mean, you didn't go this year, did you? But
no, to be fair, I was dead happy to do that, and it was so close to 120 that it is pretty much a 120. It is pretty much a 120. It's 119.945, so I was well happy with that. And yeah, I don't know, it's not really necessarily a target to disagree with that, but...
Will you go back to the TT, do you think?
It depends on short circuit racing, really, because we are privateers and trying to run it ourselves, running the team and, you know, you have to do everything, you know, bike preparation, all the mechanicking, all the stuff that goes into it to actually before you get on the track. It just takes so much time.
I mean, Steve, who's just gone down to Halfords to get some gas, I think, who's your business partner here, he's your race mechanic, isn't he? I mean, it is just a fantastic story of, you know, this sort of two friends just going out and doing it, and it's marvellous that people can still do it. But how frustrating is knowing that if you had a larger budget, if you could get that sponsorship in, you could just produce that much higher level of performance, because it's the package, isn't it? It's not just you, unfortunately. It is
quite frustrating, especially when you kind of understand it from behind the scenes of how it all manifests to the point when you're on the track, and when you're sort of getting judged on the track. But sometimes people don't necessarily understand the effort that's gone to get you there or what it involves, and they just judge you on your performance. But if they knew the story behind it, then it would.
Yeah.
Great.
Sorry, I think Jenny's just got to answer the phone, so we'll just pause there. So, phone call dealt with. I was just looking at some of the trophies up there, and I know you were buzzing about the Thundersport double win. Is it right in saying that Alton's probably one of your favourite tracks?
Yeah, it's one of those circuits that lets you know you're riding a bike, you know.
Yeah.
Everything that you love about bike riding, all the enjoyment, is you get it all from riding Alton Park, you know.
Yeah. And would I be right in that saying that someone like Silverstone maybe is a circuit that penalises your disadvantages in terms of power and...
Yeah, because it's got... Now, because it's so fast and it's got a couple of really long straights. Yeah, it does, because bike, if you haven't got the power down the straights, you lose everything you could potentially gain in the corners. You've lost on the straights, so...
Yeah. Well, one question Ken Haylock asked me to ask was if there was a racing fairy godmother who could grant you one wish or remove one obstacle, what's the one area that you'd really like to throw something at the bike or at the package that would make it...
It's just financially based. If you had a massive wedge of cash, so you could either turn your team into the likes of Samsung Honda with the same staff, the same bike, option on parts, you know, and just turn your team into what they have, or other option is actually ride for it.
The frustration, it's the old thing about the kid trying to get a job. You can't have a job till you get experience. If you can't get experience, you have a job. And
until
you go fast, you're not going to attract the sponsorship, but without that sponsorship and that backing,
you can't
it's going to struggle to go fast. Yeah.
It is very much chicken and egg.
I mean, would you, in a way, would you have enjoyed it going back to during when Neil McKenzie and James Whittam and the like were racing, and they used to have the same type that the RD350 series, where there literally are keys in a bowl, but there's nothing kinky about it. It's just you pick which bike you're going to get, and they are all as close to equal as they could make.
Yeah, I mean, that sometimes brings up some of the best racing as well. And like when they have the CB500 Cup and even the R6 Cup,
Yeah.
And everybody's on the same bike. It's, you know, it's good actually to watch. I enjoyed watching them, you know, and it's good as a racer. Mentally, you know you're on exactly the same equipment.
And they weren't allowed to do anything to alter the tune or the gearing or anything like that, were they?
They are allowed to set the suspension up to suit yourself. So,
right.
Yeah, somebody, I guess if somebody's got more experience, setting the bike up would probably do better. I mean, but if you could ride a bike and absolutely not be allowed to touch it one iota, I mean, that would be quite good. Not allowed to touch the suspension, not allowed to touch the tyre pressure.
So, really horrible question. If the BSB race circuit or race organisation said, right, we're going to do a one-off where everyone's on
the same
bike, where do you think you're going to come?
I don't know. I'd like to think at least mid-park, but I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'd really like to go out and win, but I don't. I know everyone, I have massive respect for everyone I race against, and they're all really, really good, so I wouldn't really know. I've done a race in the past where it's all the same bike, and come in the middle, mid-pack, so...
Excuse me. I just inhaling some of your lovely coffee.
Sorry.
And who in the paddock... is there anyone that you... I'm sure that you admire a lot of them, but are there any of them that you look at and you think, he's got something that I want to emulate, or he's got a certain style that can help me, or...?
There's lots of them, actually, because different riders have got different... different things about them that make them go fast. You can see, like you say with Hislop, if he wasn't in the right frame of mind, or something was going slightly wrong, he couldn't ride, he had to be perfect. I think Keogh's kind of the same sort of character. But when it's perfect, he's on fire, you know, he's brilliant.
Because he did really well at Knock Hill, but then the test at Snetterton, he was back in the... I think he picked up in the afternoon session, but in the morning they were saying he's like nowhere.
But it seems like he has to be in that sort of comfort zone where he's happy with everything, and then he can just go, you know, like, do touch paper and just...
Yeah, I saw him win at World Superbikes at Donington in the wet, and he was just sideways around every corner, and it was like, how's he doing that?
Yeah.
And it was incredible. And then I don't think we saw him on the podium for the rest of the year, except I think maybe once at Monza.
And then you get the other ones that have just got sheer bloody determination, you know, like Tommy Hill and probably the Lowe's twins are just so focused and so...
Yeah.
I guess Carl Crutcher as well, you know, just single-mindedly.
He seems to do best when he's angry.
Yeah.
We speculate he should have a qualifying crash bike that he can just go out and crash on, run back, and then get on the front row.
Yeah.
Because he seems to work really well when he's angry.
Yeah.
But just looking at you, talking about it, there's a real joy. And I guess you don't get angry. But do you get... Or you probably... Yeah, I just heard a chuckle from Steve. Do you get angry whilst you race, or is it afterwards? Yeah, you do.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
The smiling goes on in your helmet.
So don't be fooled by the smile.
Yeah, no. When you put your helmet on, it's like...
I mean, I've heard this before, that some people, a bit like Venus and Serena Williams, they were brought up to be champions, and their dad didn't care what it was at, basketball, tennis, in the end they fell on tennis. And some races, like... I don't really like bikes, but it's what I'm good at, and I like winning.
Right.
Are you more, I would imagine, the Rossi way, where you just love riding bikes, and it's just the challenge of making them go as fast as you can?
I love bikes anyway. It's like people say to me, don't you hate watching? I still like watching. That's where, you know, I used to watch, and I'd love riding them. And the challenge is, I guess, people kind of don't expect someone like myself to do it or to do well. And that kind of fires you up to want to go and do it and show that you can.
Yeah, in your face. Mr. Preconception Man, yeah.
Do I?
Excellent.
Yeah. But just also, not necessarily that either, sort of my background, because I don't come from a racing background, I don't come from money, I'm just a normal person who had a bike on the road.
Yeah.
But also that, to actually go and progress and get a superbike.
And
irrespective of gender, you know, it's massive achievement.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you're not muscular, you're not a big, you know, you don't have a manly build. How would you find with the physicality of, because I mean, I Jim Race, our name is actually Jim Race, ironically, is the only one of us who's raced before. Me and Jules have done track days. But I find, particularly going to the Ron Aslam school at Donington, I did it at Silverstone, after 20 minutes, I am hanging. Now, okay, I'm in my late 40s, so, and you know, I'm not as fit as I used to be. But just the idea of doing, you know, a 45-minute race where your concentration levels must be extraordinary.
Yeah.
Because you've got other people who want to be on the same bit of tarmac as you are.
Yeah, it's tough going. I'm trying to hang on to the... I find it more so with the superbike, just literally trying to hang on to the thing, you know, and get it to go where you want it to go at a certain speed. It's massively physically demanding. It's more so than... Like you say, unless you've sort of done it yourself, you can't really have an appreciation of how...
No, and I wouldn't really say I've done anything like that, because I go as fast as I can, which is... I remember coming back from Donington, my wife said, how'd you get on? I said, I got a 156, so I beat Timmy. She went, oh, that's really good. She said, that's only 31 seconds, or 29 seconds, I think it was then, slower than Troy Bayliss. And I went, right. So he, after one lap, he goes across the line, and I made her sit there and stare at me for 29 seconds. She went, oh, that's quite bad. I went, I know. But, you know, that's Troy Bayliss. I'm me. What do you expect? But you feel like... one of us who's managed to get in there, because some of them do come from, I wouldn't say privileged backgrounds in terms of, you know, they went to Eton and Harrow and had rich parents, but almost brought up with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got to know, just gone, you know, you've been brought up aware of it and you've got a bike family, but there's a lot of bikers who will never go on a racetrack.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I guess, like when Neil McKenzie was racing, because I remember reading his autobiography and he was saying, you know, you can just buy a bike out of the showroom and it would be good enough to win, you know. And you can, back then, you could run out the back of Van and you could just be a normal person, you could roll up and you could potentially win. But these days, you do, because it's so expensive, you do sort of have to be brought up with it, and, you know, you have to be on a bike when you're like 6 or 7 and doing motocross and kind of progress.
Yeah. But there's always exceptions. I mean, Biaggi didn't get on a bike till he was 18 or 19. So you're beating him. So there's your target. World Superbike champion.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few, but there are quite, you know, there are some that have done it. Like Steve Plater, you know, he's done it. He started late and he's done it the normal, kind of like a normal person sort of way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's like, I fancy I'm good at this. And he's been amazing and really good. And so you can do it. You can do it.
I mean, you don't have to choose one or the other, but short circuit against real roads is a question we've asked a few times before. And I asked James Whitton at the beginning of this year, what makes some people able to do the crossover, Michael Rutter being, you know, I'm thinking prime case. And yet McGuinness, who is up there with Joey Dunlop now as king of the island, you stick him in BSB Superstock and he's mid-pack. And he said it's... the short circuit people know how to get those last tenths out, and it's all about setup and it's about precision.
Yeah.
Now, he said if they want to go and do the TT and they've got the nuts to do it properly, they will be really, really good. But most of them don't.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering what your thoughts were about Josh Brooks going across there, because he's done a pretty creditable job in his fit and he seems to have got the bug.
Yeah. It's brilliant for him to go over, you know, because have a top racer. To want to go over and do it, and to apply himself to it properly, you know, and that speed he did was amazing for a newcomer.
Yeah, like, it's just you're not meant to be going that fast this early, you know.
But like Sir John, he was like British 250 champion. You can't forget he was.
Yeah.
And Superstock is so competitive. People say why aren't you so good on short circuit, John? But no, he is really good on short circuit. People sort of forget what he's done in his past. He's done, you know, MotoGP and.
And I know he says himself. He says, look, I'm old, I'm fat, and I'm too lazy to go to the gym.
Yeah, but you've taken like 10 years
on
ago.
On TT, right?
Yeah, but he was brilliant short circuit rider, and he's wanted to do the roads. But I think his short circuit riding has taught him all the skills that he's applied to the roads, but he's also applied himself to the roads to be good at the roads, you know what I mean? Like he was saying that lots of the short circuit races don't have the balls sometimes to do it. John's actually done both. He was successful short circuit racing.
Yeah.
And even now though he's got a podium at the beginning of the year. People sort of forget that he is really good.
Yeah.
And the series he's in is so competitive. If you look at the lap times, it's so close between the whole field.
Yeah.
If he's like 10th, it makes him look bad, but he's not bad, he's really good, because he'd be like a couple of tenths off the guy who's won it or on pole, so he's not slow by any means.
From your point of view, thinking about budgets and that, would you be able to get closer to the top two budgets if you went into super spot stock, or...?
Yeah, I was looking at my times. My times in Superbike, because it's like 400 as well, there's more distance between the guy who's on pole to the guy who's like 40th on the grid. You know, you've got maybe 4 seconds or 5 seconds, depending on the track. But Superbike, you've got maybe 2 or 3 seconds between first and last. The actual, because the grid's not as full either. You know, you've got about 20, 26 of us, 23, depending. Yeah, it's, it's tough, you know, a minuscule off, but you lost. Like, you see quite a lot of really good guys at mid-pack, but then you look at the time and he's literally two or three tenths off pole, just because everybody's so good and everyone's so
good. It's the separation is so minuscule.
Yeah.
Conversely, though, sticking with Superbike, are you more likely to be able to attract sponsorship by being in the what's seen as the Prestige Series?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I mean, I've had brilliant sponsors. You know, last year, Hard Engine, sorry, mate, and I've had Manx Glass for, you know, two or three years now. And he's fantastic, you know, and he's still sponsoring this year. Brilliant, so definitely can't complain about the help I've had, because I've had brilliant help, for sure, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know. When you kind of know what the other teams have got as well, you definitely need to compete at the same level as them. Like you say with the titanium bolt thing, if you can have all the bits, goodie bits that they've got as well, you need more money.
Yeah. Well, if any of us win the lottery, I think we'll definitely have a look at two-wheel racing and just say, come on, let's see what you can do when you've got equal footing to the other guys. Thank you ever so much for taking time. I know you're very busy. The last thing is this right that you train to become a mechanic? So that would help you in a bike racing career.
Yeah.
So actually, your job was
to go racing.
Was chosen, selected, trained for, qualified, and is being pursued to allow you to go racing.
It sort of kills two birds with one stone, doesn't it? And I know I've been maintaining a look after my own bike, and I can earn a little bit to pay for it.
Yeah. Oh, it's absolutely fantastic. Jenny, thank you ever so much. We will follow your progress closely, and I am literally 10 miles down the road. So if we can come back and speak to you another time, maybe towards the end of the season, see how it's gone. Now things are looking forward, and if any of our listeners have a motorbike and you want it serviced, do you do MOTs?
Yeah.
Serviced MOTs, fettled, tuned up, you can come to Two Wheel Workshop in Ellesmere Port. Just Google it, CH653DU. There you go. And you can have your bike worked on by a proper race team, including the fastest lady around the Isle of Man. That's brilliant. Jenny, thank you ever so much.
Cheers.
And we will we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you very much.
Right. So that was cool. That
yeah.
Dude, well done. Once again, a pat on the back. Well, golf clap.
Thank you, but I've got to say, you know, Jenny made it so easy because you just... You know, I mean, I edited a couple of bits out that even you and Jules haven't heard of me waffling about myself, because I was actually quite, not nervous, but it was just, I thought, where do I start? And then as soon as we got started, Jenny just made it so easy, just went with the flow. And I would say, if you've got a bike and you live in Northwest England or the Northeast of Wales, twowheelworkshop.com.
.co.uk.
No. Twowheelworkshop.com.
Okay.
That's the bike shop to get your bike MOT'd, serviced, fettled. Twowheelracing.co.uk is the team website. Or you can go to jennytinmouth.com, and that's tin mouth, as if your mouth is made of tin, which I can quite happily say Jenny's isn't, .com. You can donate as sponsors. You can have your name on a fairing. You know, similar to the Yamaha team did a couple of years ago, I think it was Indy, was it, where they had all the names on or the faces on.
Ah, yes.
There's, you know, she said they get great support from Manx Glass, Isle of Man Glass Company, and they've been her main sponsor for a couple of years. You know, but I mean, at that level, it's a bit like the podcast. If any of our listeners is an eccentric gazillionaire and you want to see how fast this girl could be if she was on equal kit. And as the guys will have just heard, I did say to her, you know, if everyone was on the same bike, where would you come? And that's a horrible question to drop on someone. And she just giggled and went, I'd like to think I'll be mid-pack. Yeah. She doesn't want to be mid-pack at all, you know.
To follow up on last week's tech bit on understeer, understeer is a very interesting question, I have to be honest, Martin. I haven't listened to last week's show yet, even though I did an interview in it. But you want to talk about slipstreaming?
Well, yeah, it was when we were in Catalonia, and one of the guys with us, who's, you know, he's a very knowledgeable biker, but he's still fairly fresh to bike racing, had said, why do they get so upset at people following them? It just seems ridiculous when they're all on the same racetrack going the same way. And we sort of laughed, and, you know, Casey Mona was mentioned a couple of times. But I said, well, it does slow the leading rider down. He's like, what? Don't be silly. How can it? I said, well, it does. It's aerodynamics. And so with the benefit there of a pen and paper, which sounds ridiculous, but one of the lads had a pen and paper to make a note of where he'd taken various photographs from. We went through, right, you've got a leading, the leading bikes. We'll talk about the lead bike and the following bike. The lead bike is pushing through the air. And for those of you who understand this, I'm sorry, you know, just go and talk amongst yourselves for a few minutes. It's pushing through the air, so you create a high pressure wave in front of the bike. And just behind the bike, literally just behind, there is a turbulent area of air, which is low pressure. And like water, air always tries to flow from high to low. So that creates a rearward force that we express as drag, or we describe as drag. And they try and make a bike as smooth and as slipstream as to create a laminar flow of air. So it's a smooth flow of air to minimize drag. And that's fine.
Well done use of the word laminar.
Laminar. Yeah. Well, laminar or linear. No. Laminar flow. Laminar. You know this from,
I do.
From flying. Yeah. So what happens when a bike tucks in behind? The following bike doesn't have that high pressure wave because he's in the low pressure area created by the front bike. However, the low pressure area is now twice the distance it was, actually slightly more than twice the distance. So now this is where we go into physics. Don't ask me why. It's one of those. It just does. The high pressure wave at the front is increased in its force because there is a corresponding. Think of it this way. If water's flowing into a shallow hole, it flows at one speed. But if it's flowing into a deep hole, it will flow at a greater speed. You've got a deeper hole. So the lead bike is now having to push slightly harder, which is why, particularly on the lower powered bikes like the Moto 3, you'll see the rider coming behind, and he could have been a second behind for three or four laps, and then he just gets close enough to benefit from the slipstream. And on a straight, such as we might see at Catalonia or Qatar, he's suddenly up and past so quickly. Well, not only is he going quicker because he's not got a high pressure wave, he's actually slowing the leading bike down fractionally. But let's face it, pole positions and race wins can be, you know, can be decided by fractions. So that's, I think, why they get so angry. And I've heard, I think it was Danny Pedrosa, not with the recent Dovizioso toe that he got a bit upset about. It was a year or two ago. He was saying, you can feel it. It feels like you've just fractionally throttled off.
Well,
and yet you haven't.
There's also, I mean, there's a secondary part that in a way, psychologically, maybe even more important, is that if somebody is tagging along with you, using you as a tow, they're learning your lines. They're stealing the knowledge that you've already built up, and kind of, I can understand why Ryder would be upset. I don't know if you remember Josh Hayes' interview from earlier this year, when he was talking about his teammate Josh Herron tagging along behind him. He's like, I don't want it to happen. I know he's quick, but he's got to figure it out on his own, not using me as a tow vehicle. I think I get that.
And yet we've seen Colin, when James Tozen came up in 08, Colin Edwards would take him out at each new track and do, you know, 3 to 5 laps, letting him follow. He did the same with Ben. He did the same with Cal Crutchlow.
That was before James stole his crew chief.
Yes.
At that point, there was little love left.
No, that was a foolish move by both the crew chief and by James, because where are they now? But Colin's still in there fighting away.
You know, Colin's an interesting duck.
Yes.
I'm kind of curious what's going to happen with him next year. because they may end up with one of the Yamaha engines, the Yamaha factory engines. And that'll be fun to see what happens on that side of the fence. There was an interview on, I think, crash.net, which I try not to read too much, but that sounded like he's definitely going to stay. And so I was pumped about that. I should get him on the phone. I tried to get him on the phone the other day, and he eluded me. I think I need to bring him back on the show. All right. We are diverging from pretty much everything. You want to talk about Allison?
Well, I was just thinking we had the Catalunya and Aragon test last week.
Oh, right. And as well as one in Almeria.
And one in Almeria. Yep. Almeria, I always want to call it. It's not. It's Almira. Mm-hmm. And we saw the Suzuki MotoGP bike being tested by Randy Depunier. They ran out on the Wednesday and the Thursday at Aragon.
But a fine-looking specimen of a motorcycle is.
Didn't it look a bit retro? But with that very curved sort of fairing. So just before we go on talking about the Suzuki, Jules, sorry, this is a car crash. And you've got to fix it.
Sorry.
I was just saying the Suzuki looked quite sort of retro with that curvy fairing. On the Thursday, Randy Depunier got out on it for a second day at Aragon and was only 1.5 seconds away from Lorenzo's time, which was a record fast lap. And it's like people going, well, you know, it's still 1.5 seconds. And Jules and I had mentioned, you know, you as Colin said before, and we've oft quoted, I hope it's Colin and Scott Baldwin's not writing and saying, actually, that wasn't Colin, that was someone else. But that first second's quite easy to get rid of. The last half second is, you know, really, really difficult. I'm not being funny. I think Randy Depino is probably 0.5 seconds slower than Lorenzo anyway. Mm. And that's a brand new bike, which the engineers are probably still learning. He's certainly still learning. Well, you know,
let's be fair about it. It's not a brand new bike. I mean, we've seen photos of that 3 years back. They've been working on it, the inline four.
But Randy only rode it earlier this year. And let's face it, when Rossi's saying he's struggling to relearn the Yamaha because of its, you know, due to its changes and the fact that, you know, he'd been trying to learn the Ducati for 2 years and he said it's quite difficult. Well, Randy's been on a Pramac Ducati. Now he's on a ART CRT bike and Aprilia effectively. And then he's got to get on that. I think 1.5 seconds is pretty damned impressive.
Well, yes. And you know quite well that the tweaks that they would have to make to that would be relatively minor, but it's the last second, as we said in, I think, two episodes again. That's the hardest part to make up.
Sure.
Would he finish in front of his current teammate? You know, that's kind of key. Suzuki doesn't want to come back in and be a min pack bike. They want to come back in and challenge for lead. Now the question is, who are the riders that they're going to end up with? I think RDP would be a fine choice. I think he still has the chops.
Zip.
I think he still has the chops to be at the front.
Well, with the announcement they're not going to come back till 2015.
Yeah.
Who knows who's going to come out of the woodwork next year as well? You know, we could see
Rossi on the Suzuki. Wouldn't that be weird?
Yeah. We could see a Nico Tirol, a Sandro Cortese, Scott Redding. Mm. You know, I suspect by then Scott Redding and Paul Espargaro will actually be established, you know, next year. But so we had these tests. The usual suspects were up front. Courtesy of YamahaRacing.com, we've got the Aragon timings combined, which was Lorenzo was quickest from Marquez, from Pedrosa, from Rossi, from Bradle, from Bautista, from RDP on the Wednesday, and on the Thursday, Marc Marquez did some laps on the 2014 Honda, which they've said they can have pretty much now. It's almost ready, which is like, ooh. And then, of course, we've had Assen. We've had day one, and it was interesting. FP1 in Moto3 was dry. We had Vinales, Salom, Rins, Io, and Folger. FP2 was wet. We had Salom, Vinales, Folger, Rins, and Marquez. So not that different. But Moto2, in the dry, Espargaro, Redding, Agata, Zarco, Simeon. Okay.
Normal.
Interestingly, Tito Rabat was, I think, down in seventh. In the afternoon, we had Pacini, Callio, Zarco, Cardoos, and Krumanacker. Now, I did find that interesting. It's only FP2. It was absolutely drenched out there. But Zarco, we've noticed this before, haven't we? He's good in the wet. Callio is good. Well, let's face it, he's Finnish. He's grown up ice riding. He's good when it's moving about underneath him. So if it's a wet race on Saturday, that could be interesting. MotoGP FP1, Lorenzo Crutchlow, Marquez, Rossi, Pedrosa. And Lorenzo was the quickest in every single sector. He must be absolutely gutted, bless him. And then FP2, we had Marquez from Rossi, from Pedrosa, from Bardal, from Dovizioso, after Jorge had his high-speed get-off and break his collarbone. Point made by Pete Jones, our photographer at Catalunya. And I say our photographer, our keen photographer whose pictures we posted. He made a point in a phone call with me earlier. He said, don't discount the Ducatis if it's wet, because that does take that final second that they can't close out of the equation. And let's look at Le Mans. Dovi was up front and, you know, once Dunny got past, he was like, no, and came back past him again.
Yeah, well, I mean, he
ended up fourth. But
and it looks like Sunday is going to be wet. Saturday. With Dovi in fifth in that nasty FP2, and with Lorenzo out of the mix, as we know now, that could change things. Cal was actually leading FP2 for almost all of the session, then sat out for the last couple of minutes, and a few guys threw some fast laps in. So if things change, or if the factory team decides to hand Jorge's bike over with different livery to Cal, we might have our first. That'd be cool, wouldn't it?
First British winner since in the top class since Barry Sheen in 1981.
I think that would be awesome, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, there was a huge amount of Twitter activity of people going, "Come on, Yamaha, give the bike to Cal." I'm thinking Lorenzo might be going, "Don't you use my engine? You use my engine? I cut off your head.
I kill you.
I kill you." Yes.
Yeah.
You killed my engine. Prepare to die.
But it's intriguing. And if that happened, it would perhaps open up a space on Tech 3 to bring one of the CRT lads up. Who that is remains to be seen. And I'm going to refrain from speculation because I've read far too much Italian and Spanish press today. I just don't want to pass it on.
And of course, if it remains wet, which people are saying it's certainly looking like tomorrow, they've all got to do at least four more sessions before we even get to the race.
Right. Yeah.
And those who go into Q2 are going to have, three more sessions and at least three more. And those who have to go into Q1 before they get to Q2, two of them will have to do four more sessions. And, you know, it is a bloody lottery out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
To a degree.
All right.
And they can make it safe, but then they'll be slow.
But at this point, we don't know. Here we are on Thursday, just with FP1 and FP2 out of the way. I will be staying up tonight to watch FP3, which for me is swiftly becoming my favorite part of a race weekend to watch. It really is. It's almost better than QP1 and QP2 to me.
Well, especially as, I mean, you can write off FP2.
Yeah.
If FP3 were to be dry, that then suddenly becomes the one that's going to count if they can go quicker than they did in FP1 today.
Exactly.
Mm.
So that'll be fun. The girlfriend might be a little bit angry, but I'll deal with it. We also, in a side note, we've got World Superbike this weekend.
At Imola, fantastic track.
Absolutely.
Really, really good racing there. It's like, for me, it's got a similar feel to Monza, but without the bad bits.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, having mentioned him earlier, the return of the Samurai of Slide. It's Nori Haga, who's coming back for the Feel Racing Team Grillini Dentalmatic BMW S1000RR.
Well done.
Thank you. I managed to say that without too many hiccups. And he said, although I haven't been racing since last October, I hope it'll be fast enough. He went to Mugello recently on the BMW, did 70 laps. And they said it was perfect weather, although there was heavy traffic as the track was being used by amateur track dayers. And I'm thinking that must have been fun for them. You know, you're thinking, yeah, I'm on it. In your Valentino Rossi replica leathers as you come into, turn one. And then there's some dude with, you know, his handlebars over the front axle just about going round the corner sideways and probably making notes as he went. Yeah, that bit's okay. I like that bit. Yeah.
Having lunch.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully Nori is going to go and, do himself credit. And I think everyone would like to see that. Whether this is a tester to see if he wants to come back for yet another season, who knows? You know, I'd hate him to do anything he didn't want to do.
True. I think the opportunity for him to come back, and Nori's never been done. He just didn't have an opportunity open up to work on stuff. So hopefully he's there with Toshi, and we'll see how that works out. I'm really looking forward to Imola. It's gonna be another one of those busy weekends, Martin. It's like, yeah. No sleep. Now you're lucky because it's all happening over there. I'm stuck here in the States. That means I have to catch all this stuff like off hours. We also
blame your ancestors.
Sorry. Yeah, I guess my immigration patterns were poor. Road America. We did have a race there with the AMA this last weekend. Josh Hayes won both races.
No.
Picture that.
He's dominating somewhat at the moment, isn't he?
He's been dominating for the last few years. Cam Beaubier, former Red Bull rookie guy, won both of the DSB races. And Joe Roberts, current Red Bull Rookie Cup contender, who is racing this weekend at the MotoGP round, also won both races. So quite the well doing. So Josh, Cam, and Joe, well done.
I mean, Cam Beaubier, I think a lot of people in Europe have been waiting for him to come back.
I think World Supersport is exactly where he needs to be right now.
Yeah.
Just needs to find the right team and the right crew to put together a package for him that would give him the opportunity to run the front. We all sucked in the fantasy league, didn't we?
We Jules and I have covered this last week, and of course we all went down.
Yeah,
I dropped 6th to 12th. You dropped 16th to 31st, and Jules dropped 24th to 141st. And I'm really looking to Eugene Laverty, Sylvain Guintoli, and Valentino Rossi to do extremely well this weekend, please, because I've lost my banker. Mr. Consistent has broken his collarbone, and I am going to be dropping like a stone. But then I suspect a lot of people have got Jorge in their team. So, yeah, I doubt I'm going to be quite as close to the pointy end as I was last week.
I do have Marquez and Cal in my team. So you could you could be in trouble.
Yeah, I could see you knocking on my back door. That is not a euphemism for anything disgusting, by the way.
Yeah, as much as we love each other in the Motopod family, that is certainly not anything you guys should infer. What else do we have going on? We've got a couple of links in the show notes for you guys to pay attention to. Once again, massive thanks to all of you that have donated to the show. I promise you that I will get these things together for next week's show. I will put it on the list of things I absolutely have to do. It's just something that has what's the term I'm looking for? Has Well, slipped out of mind. So,
yeah. In fact, it's eluded you.
I guess it kind of like a spider you're trying to kill. And every time
I never try and kill them. You just, I always try and rescue them and put them outside.
All right. Well, apparently this keeps getting put outside. Martin, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Not at all. It's always a pleasure, Jim. It's both my pleasure and my duty, as we like to say at work. and a final extra thanks to Ken Haylock, who gave me some great pointers. And like you said, you know, Jenny's been someone we wanted to talk to for a long time, and Ken just gave us that. Go on, are you going to? So we reply and going, yeah, right, okay, I've spoken to her, she's up for it. You need to ring this number and da-da-da. So, you know, he left us with no avenue to elude anymore. And it's a damn good job. So we will definitely be back to speak to Jenny later in the season.
Cool.
And, you know, if you guys, particularly across the pond, don't know about it, have a look. She's competing in BSB Superbike up against, you know, the Shaky Burns and the Josh Brookers and the Alex Lowe's of this world. And she's also, although she didn't go this year, a TT racer of some renown. So, woof.
Woof. So now he's going to pester you to chase down Catherine Green.
Yeah.
Yep.
Carolyn Sells, Maria Costello. Yeah. There's
Actually, I think I had a chat with Maria Costello about 2 years ago, 2.5 years.
Yeah. I think, and this is completely off the top of my head, where there's nothing else now but thoughts. I think Jenny might have taken Maria's record offer when she went around the island quickest.
I believe she did.
Yeah.
All right. Go away.
Yes. Yes, sir.
All right. Jim Race for Motopod with Martin Darlington in the Wales. Thank you guys for downloading the show. If you'd like to join us on Facebook, you can do so at facebook.com/motopod. If you'd like to send us a donation, you can do so at motopodcast.com. Left-hand side of the page, there's a couple of donate buttons or subscribe, which we would prefer. Martin, you are probably back to work pretty soon. Going
Saturday.
All right, going to be flying back in Hilo, rescuing people from the hinterlands when they fall off their motorbikes and such.
And horses.
And horses.
And trampolines.
Yes, and I am going to be going back to dragging all of my stuff from my various moving spots to try and get everything consolidated into a final place where I can figure out what the fuck I'm going to do.
Sounds like I'm going to have more fun than you are, old chap.
I would prefer to be flying a helicopter about if I actually knew how to fly a helicopter.
Yep.
All right, mate. Good to talk to you once again, and we will chat again soon. Thanks again for downloading the show. We will talk to you guys next week.
Good night, all.
Cheers.
Right, so we had a little bit of a technical. It's a wandering minstrel. I think of issues there.
Well done.
Bit of a cross line. Cluck cluck jibber jibber. My man's a mushroom, etc. But we seem to have sorted it out.
Martin, you'll laugh. I had the weirdest dream the other night. It was actually about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I dreamed it that I woke up and we had a donation of $4 million.